Wow.
Fuzzy windscreen on it, but it's not. What is that again, Arrow?
It's a nice photo.
It's acoustic is what it is. It's a play. You know, what happens is that Native Americans use acoustics to go into a different nation, and their worst enemy, they would go up and tap them on the shoulder to show courage. And but it just shows also that somewhere inside their heart, there is peace.
That's a lovely photograph.
Thank you so much. Thank you. What you don't get to see on it is my Ibanez Flying V. And I need to put the Ibanez in there because that thing has been with me since I was 17 years old.
Wow. Where are you from?
Originally from Billings. No, I was born in Sheridan, Wyoming, but I grew up in Billings, Montana.
And where are you talking to me from now?
Charlotte, North Carolina.
Oh, Charlotte, North Carolina. I've been there. That's a lovely state.
Yes, you have been here, man. God, what you have done with your life, I mean, it's just amazing. It's like you've got this one-way ticket to visit the world.
Well, it amazes me too.
I got to tell you, I want to thank you so much for dedicating the book to Lisa. And the reason why is because even our family members don't understand the paths that we choose as creative people.
Well, you're right about that. She's interviewing me tonight for our book launch. And she read the book and she said to me, "Mom, I didn't know you did whatever, whatever, whatever." So she's going to say that tonight. And I think that'll be meant for a funny conversation.
Oh, my God. You've got to post that. Please tell me you're going to film that and post it.
I don't know if we're going to film it. Just talk to my publicist, Megan over here.
Yeah, because it's moments like that where the family gets to ask the questions, and then you get to answer it so they can ask even more questions, because they do wonder what it is that we went through, not only physically, but mentally.
I think for my daughter, her father died when she was 15, so it was a lot of tragedy for us. I mean, I'd had that time, and he'd had that time, and then suddenly he was gone.
Yeah.
So it wasn't so happy, you know, and we didn't talk about it much because it upset me a lot. So it's a different time now. Since I've written the book, I think it's been cathartic for me, and I think it's been informational for her.
So when you go in and you write me and Mr. Jones, and when you say it's cathartic, I mean, I, as a writer myself, I know that once I let something out, I've got to put something back in. What are you putting back inside that heart?
Oh, traveling around and having such a great time promoting it. I'm having a wonderful time. Who would think most of my friends are sitting in front of the telly?
So is there ever a time when you look in the mirror and you go, "Oh, I've got to put some makeup on and I want to give myself an image and a persona"?
Well, I have to put the makeup time, but I've been putting makeup on for Zoom calls at 8 o'clock in the morning. And that's a bit of a challenge. I'm normally on the couch with a cup of tea watching the news.
Yep.
And now I have to be camera ready and something nice on top. I might be sitting in my knickers, but something nice on top so I can do a Zoom call. So, yes, in actual fact, I am starting to use makeup, which I rarely used before. But now my daughter's taught me about contouring and little eye stuff. So yeah. I'm using makeup more now.
Wow. Becoming Ziggy. As an artist, I know what that transition is like. As you were putting that makeup on, could you see that physical transition happening in front of you?
Well, you know, I didn't use the makeup. David had a makeup artist, yeah. Pierre LaRoche, or he did his own makeup. I did his hair. That's what I did. And I prepared his costumes, made sure everything was working. Zips weren't stuck, all that kind of a thing, for him and the band.
Yeah.
So obviously you can see the transformation when he comes in. You sip a glass of wine while he was applying his makeup and I was doing his hair. And you could see him and the band were slowly transforming themselves into what they were going to be on stage.
See, and to me, it's not just hair. I came from that generation where that hair was the image. I still have long hair to this day, but it is my pride. I mean, there's just something about that story with people that aren't afraid to do things with their hair.
Well, I thought he was so brave. I mean, I never thought I'd be talking about this haircut some 50 years later. That always kind of astounds me. But it was a groundbreaking haircut. The haircut I originally did was a Kansai Yamamoto model. And she just had a short puff of red at the front. So pretty soon afterwards, it became my haircut. It stood up all over. It had longer back, longer sides. And of course, I found the color.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, that is so important.
Color.
Even today, color is everything. I love the way that people...
Color's everywhere now, though. It wasn't so easy back in those days. For some reason, in our salon, we used to carry the Schwarzkopf range. and there was a fantasy rage, and for some reason they'd ordered some of these fantasy colors, and one of them was the one I used on David, red hot red. 30 volume peroxide for any hairdressers out there to give it some lift. The problem was really making it stand up, because there was no fixatives in those days. I think we had soft setting lotions or dippity-do, and that wasn't going to do it. So I used this anti-dandruff treatment from Germany. Its side, it was called Guard. The side effect of this hair product was it set hair like stone. So I used it on David, and it worked really well.
Wow. I was going to ask you, because there was no mousse back then. There was no way that
there was nothing. But mousse would have been too soft anyway.
Oh, my God.
But it was no, you know, it's the gels, I think, today that allow you to shape your hair in certain styles. We didn't have that stuff back then. We didn't.
You're going to think I'm a freak, but I used to use Noxzema. And the only reason why is because I was trying to create a mess so I could do something with the mess.
Yes. What did you use?
I would use Noxzema. I would make it, and then it would make it kind of, when it would dry, it would be kind of like crystally. And I was like, okay, now
like
I've got control.
Like a cream, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, exactly. Some people use very different things for helping with beauty products. I used to a girl that used to use Preparation H under her eyes. And apparently that really got rid of those bags. I mean, who knew?
So when you're out there and you're bringing this stage together, you get to see the performers before we do in that live audience. I just can't imagine the conversations and or the eye conversation that you would have as things began to evolve.
Well, I saw them in London at a college before I joined up with them. That was my turning point. After I saw that concert, I knew I had to be part of this, and that was my main focus, was getting to work with them. My friends told me I was crazy. No girls went on the road. But it was right in front of me. That was right in front of me, and I had to snag it. And I managed to do that. And then we were on the road, and it was rock and roll in its infancy.
Yep.
You know, on buses, fans were chasing us up and down England and then America. It was an incredible experience. Incredible.
You know, you talk about no women, but yet you were the only woman on that entourage.
That's right. I was the only woman on the road. I think I was the first girl roadie. I mean, I say that tentatively, but I'm pretty sure that I was. I never, ever encountered another girl that was on the road working on a crew. I was the first.
Do you think that today we're trying to get back into music having an image with hair and with fashion and with just the persona of mystique?
The mystique's gone, though, hasn't it? I don't see it these days. Maybe it's because I'm older. I don't know. But I just think, God, how do people do it these days? The music business has evolved into such a business. You know, if a band starts out, are they going to get a record deal? From who? Some place online that's going to give them what? I mean, there was a few record companies back in those days. And when you were signed to those record companies, you had more of a chance. You know, people would promote you. You go out on the road. But you go out on the road today, where do you play?
Yeah.
I used to live in Woodstock, New York. You know, it had four places to have live music. When I lived in Beckenham in England, there was three places to play live music. It's not like that today. I don't see it. I don't see music like that. You either, I don't know quite how people groundbreak. I don't know how they break themselves. I don't.
You're so right about that, because here in the Carolinas, we have grocery stores that feature live music during the week.
That is perfect. That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
Because people need to cut their teeth on playing in front of people, see what people like. They don't seem to have that. I know in New York they do, but it's a little more bands that have got to a certain level that play in New York City.
Yeah.
In London, though, it's not really like that. When I was go back to Beckenham, I go back. In Camden Town, maybe there's some. It's a very different business these days.
When you came up with that hairstyle, you had to have practiced somewhere, and it didn't come out the first time. How did you really say, that's it, that's what we're going with? Did he let you play with his hair?
Well, yeah, David was brave. I mean, he was really brave. I cut it. I mean, I cut it that first night, and I was cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't stand up. It just flopped to one side. And he looked like a schoolboy, and I felt dreadful. And he wasn't too happy. But I said to him, David, the second we get color in your hair, the texture will change and it will stand up. I mean, I was praying I was right. And if the setting lotion hadn't worked, or if the guard hadn't worked, I was going to bleach his hair out white and then put the red on it, because that would have damaged his hair. And that was another way I was thinking I was going to make it stand up. But it wasn't like David was a huge star at that point. He wasn't.
Yeah.
He was still playing at the local pub. Yeah. So it wasn't like I felt I was so much on the line. Mm. I wanted to make it work because I wanted to remain in that circle and be his hairdresser. But I did make it work.
Don't you miss those days of being in those pubs? Because to me, there's such soul inside those four walls. And then when you get into the arenas, it's like, okay, no walls. It's an arena. What are we going to do?
Well, I mean, I think people do actually compensate for the arenas, Taylor Swift, Beyonce,
yeah, right.
Those huge bands, they do put on, and you do have those big screens. Of course, we never had screens, so we could never see, you know, and that transition from arena, from, you know, regular rock to arena rock, they were just little twigs on stage, weren't they? No one could really see anything.
Right.
So I think they've compensated a lot for that by having the big screens and by these light shows. And we had dried ice. That was the best thing that we had. We had much more than that. So it's just evolved and evolved into something else.
Oh my God, you bringing that up. That's exactly what we would do inside trailer houses and all these little private parties that we would bring the music to. We would use the dry ice. We would screw up our hair. We'd put junk on our face. And it's because of people like David Bowie.
That's right. That's right. Yes, wow. It was.
Wow.
David Bowie was definitely a groundbreaker. And I happened to be along with him. So, yes, I had a wonderful time.
Wow. The photograph of you with Ziggy, that should be framed on everybody's wall, because that to me is a collaboration of music that people do not ever get to see.
Well, that was backstage, and it was a Mick Rock photograph. My darling Mick Rock, who died a couple of years ago, somebody else that's no longer with us.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a really, really good friend of mine, Mick, and he did many, many wonderful photographs of David and the band during that time.
I got to spend some time with Mick, and I'll tell you what, that man, he talks in real deep conversation, and he's got a purpose and a plan, and he was just so amazing as to what his eyes had to do before it reached us.
Absolutely. He was an incredible photographer, a real artist.
Wow. Wow. So I'm so jealous of you in the way that you caught the Beatles at the age of 14. I caught the Beatles when they were solo performers. I wasn't moved by the Beatles, but yet I was moved by the David Bowies of the world. But how did you change at 14?
Oh, it changed me completely. I think I was lucky, you know, our generation. My generation were the first generation that didn't go to war. Before us, there was my parents went to the Second World War. My grandparents were in the First World War and the Second World War. That's where they spent their formative years, killing people or driving people to their planes or waiting for people to come back in their planes that they didn't come back. So their world was very different to mine. We had the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, fabulous fashion and the pill. So our generation had a whole different thing. I mean, I remember thinking that there was going to be no bigger gap between a generation of me and my parents. Well, of course, I was completely wrong, because computers, AI, all the things are different now. They were just as big. But we were the first generation that didn't have a war. We were the first generation that had a lot of live music. And the Beatles, of course, changed everything.
Wow.
Seeing them in that small place I did in Fairfield Halls. I mean, I say see them because I couldn't hear them. We screamed the entire 45-minute set.
Yeah.
Why did we do that? Do people still do that? I'm not sure.
Yeah, they do.
Do people scream at Harry Styles so they can't hear him?
Yep, they sure do.
I don't know.
I've talked with people that have seen Harry as well as Taylor Swift, and all they remember is how they have no voice because they couldn't stop singing and or screaming.
That's right. So it's a very strange phenomenon. You know, I think it's very odd that we do that. We pay good money to go and see a show and then we scream all the way through it.
Wow.
I don't know. I think only really young girls do that these days.
I got to tell you, you've given me a new feeling about the black and white photos that are featured inside Me and Mr. Jones. And the reason why, when you talk about, you know, you're the first generation that didn't have to go to war, but yet now that I go back and I look at these photographs, I'm going, oh, but yet that's what she had at the age of 14 were black and white photos. And now I have,
yes.
I have a new respect for every reason why these photos are in this book.
Well, it wasn't encouraged to take photographs of David on the road. It wasn't. I have a couple of snaps.
Yeah.
But also, There was no iPhones, so you had to physically have a camera. You had to buy the film, really expensive. You had to develop the film, even more expensive. And you might be lucky if you get a couple of snaps. You know, it wasn't a little brownie, Kodak brownie was what I had. So no one took, I mean, I didn't want to be uncool. I'm not going to be taking photographs. It would have been completely uncool. We had designated photographers, not just Mick Rock, but Lee Black Childers. He also took incredible photographs.
Wow.
Of that time.
A man just shared a quote with me a couple of weeks ago when you talked about these photographs and how you really didn't take a lot of photographs. He said, what would you rather have, a memory or a dream? And that kind of reminds me of what he just asked, because you've got so many memories that you've now put inside this book. So now those of us that dreamed about it have something to hold on to.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you go to a concert now and you look at people holding their iPhones up.
Oh.
Horrible.
Yep.
Why do you want to look at your iPhone if you can look at a performer? I would prefer not to see the iPhones and have the experience. And the last time I saw Bob Dylan in New York, we had to leave them outside. And I was never more happy.
Yeah.
Because then you can get immersed in the music and enjoy the show instead of watching someone's bloody iPhone in front of you, which I found excruciatingly annoying.
Would you say that Adam Lambert is the closest thing to the fashion world of Ziggy?
I guess so.
Yeah.
I mean, what is he doing now? I haven't seen him for quite some time.
Oh, my God. I must be on his list to receive videos because I get them every single day. And every day I see his makeup, I see his hair, I see his fashion. And I go, I know you're Adam, but I also see David Bowie inside everything.
David Bowie was the first.
Oh, my God,
David
yes.
David Bowie was the first. And what a fabulous person. What a great looking guy David was.
Yeah.
I mean, and how he was very clever, David. It wasn't till after I left him and I was with Mick Ronson and Mick's trying to put his solo show together that I realized that we actually weren't David and Angie. We were just Mick Ronson and Susie Fussy from the hairdressing salon and the school gardener. And for David and Angie, it was almost effortless for David to change himself. To do something different, not just musically, but the way he looked.
Yep. Yeah.
He could do it easily, and it was not as easy as one would think. When we tried to transform Mott the Hoople, oh my God. We couldn't think of anything. We just couldn't think of anything. They just had short hair, and it just looked like Mott with short hair. It wasn't a groundbreaking change like David. Every time David changed his appearance, it was incredible.
Yeah. Where can people go to find out more about you, Susie, and give you a ton of love?
Well, I mean, I have my Facebook page. I know that I'm on Faber and Faber from the UK, and I'm on Pegasus in New York, and you can see a lot of stuff about me there. And through listening to people like you, that's when you can find out about more about me.
Well, you've got to come back to this show anytime in the future. I love the way you can share a story and you put so much heart into it.
Thank you so much. It was nice to talk to you.
Well, you be brilliant today, okay, Susie?
Thank you. My opening tonight in New York. My New York launch is tonight in New York.
And your daughter's going to interview you. So go.
It's funny. Well, it's just that some things, when she read the book, she was like, Mom, I didn't know you did that. Yeah. You know, it's just something that hadn't come up until now. She read the book and she's like, Mom, really? It's a bit like that, you know.
Yeah. Well, you have a great time tonight, okay?
Thank you so much. Thank you. And thanks for today.